Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow, Pullman. Recovery Radio is recorded live at the Latah Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I am Radio Johnny, and in the conference room / studio with me today is an old friend, Miss Denise. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Johnny. Thanks for having me here today.
All right. Denise, you had, as far as the calendar goes, I'm just going to let people go to the calendar at the LatahRecoveryCenter.org website and check out the daily offerings. Denise, why don't we go through a little bit of what you do here specifically, maybe talk about what the LRC does in general, and we can talk about the Rural Crisis Center Network and all that too. So I'm just going to throw it over to you and let you ramble on.
So the Latah Recovery Center offers a lot of different support groups and then also some fun activities that can, you know, be seen on the calendar. We're really just trying to help people connect with the recovery community, because as you're coming out of struggling with substance use disorder or different kinds of things, like reconnecting with people and groups that help support you moving forward is very important. And that's a lot of what I do. So we provide different kinds of fun activities for people to do. And also, you know, NA and AA is a very important part of the groups that we have here as well. We have recovery coaches and peer specialists. If many of you may know Sean, he is a multitude of things here. And so he understands a lot about substance use disorder and also mental health things that are related. Right. And he is also a big part of the Crisis Center. But backtracking to the recovery coach, which I'm very familiar with.
Because
I am.
Certified.
Yep.
And everything.
Yep. And a lot of what I do is basically just like listening to understand where a person is today and what they're going through, and helping them decide what kinds of like resources and connections that they would like to find out about. It can also be about giving some encouragement and putting some things into perspective as we're talking and stuff. I remember when I was early in recovery, some of my support people that were just amazing and made all the difference, they would say things to me and it was super encouraging. And I just really didn't at that time have the capacity to be able to see that. And really some of those kind words kept me moving forward. And so I remember that as I work with people. So anyways, back to, it's, I think, important if someone doesn't have connections with the community in recovery that they can find the supports that fit right for them. There are many different pathways as to what that could look like, many different kinds of groups in our area and neighboring areas as to what that could look like. It's also part of what I do to connect people with other kinds of support if they want to go in treatment. We have... I am a drug court graduate, so I know about that program. And Elizabeth, who works here, she's a case manager. She does the reentry, and she works closely with drug court and mental health court. So I would say that there's a lot of different knowledge in the building with the different staff members that work here. And we also have Vandal Recovery on campus where Margaret and Steven work. And they do an amazing job over there working with the students and I believe also the faculty there, providing supports for them as well and connections. And that is in, I believe, the Campus Christian building.
Yes. Used to be called Campus Christian Center. Now it's just called the Center.
Yes.
But it's right there on Greek Row.
Yes.
So you can't miss it. A block up from Vandal store and coffee house there.
Yeah, and they also have like a little co-op there too. So
right,
it's kind of like a, that's kind of cool that they have that there because they have such delicious food. So you can get lunch and visit with Margaret or Stephen as well. And their recovery coaches over there. So
and they host a whole bunch of activities.
They do.
That are more slated student. Towards yeah. the student and student life. Mm-hmm. And I understand they've Emily, unfortunately, who left us a month or so ago, really developed a lot of resources there and got the word out. And so it's great. And Margaret, who hopefully I'll be interviewing in the next couple of weeks, she's just brand new.
Yep.
And taking over where Emily left off and working, like you said, working with Steve. Hope that she continues on. She's a firecracker.
I believe she's meeting with people now and things like that. And so it'll be really good to have her on here so that people can kind of get to know a little bit more about her and what she's doing.
Right.
That's really cool.
And she's got a great recovery story too. I've heard part of it and it's pretty amazing. Yeah. She came out of a pretty dark place. So, and that's always for me, that's always the best kind of recovery story because, I can look at it and say, well, I didn't go there, but I could see it from where I was.
Right. It gives a lot of hope to see where people started and where they are now. That's super encouraging and very inspiring.
That's right. That's right. You can put down the shovel whenever you want.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I was going to backtrack just a little bit with you there. We have kind of a unique approach here to recovery. And it's something that some people who are in some recovery programs like AA or NA might disagree with it.
But I think I know what
nonetheless,
you're talking about.
I think it's valid.
Yeah.
We say that people are in recovery when they say they're in recovery.
Yes.
You know, an AA might say, well, if you're still drinking, you're not in recovery. But that's not entirely true either because in our preamble, for AA, it says the only requirement for membership is a desire to get sober.
Yes.
So, which is great, you know, because I can't tell you how many people I've known who showed up to AA meetings, you know, under the influence, but were still encouraged to keep coming back.
Right.
And eventually, you know, something clicked and they were able to stop drinking. So if you're going to say, I'm in recovery, then you've made a decision, you know, how you get to that sober part of recovery. And sober doesn't mean just not drinking. It's clarity of mind and thought. So once you start taking steps into that world, I mean, all the better. But, you know, maybe you're not in recovery if you're still out there running and gunning, you know. But once you walk in here and go, you know, I think I drink too much or the judge is on my back or family's on my back or whatever, I think I might have a problem. I think it's fair to say you're stepping into recovery.
Right.
So,
absolutely. When people meet with me, I mean, they are their own individuals. My story is different and unique from everyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just meeting people where they are and listening to what's going on and listening to what their next steps are and seeing what I can do to walk alongside of them in that. And so that they're not doing it by themselves because sometimes just the ability to say stuff out loud of what the current situation and circumstances are to what's going on in our lives is really powerful to be able to say that out loud to another human being. And in that process, people are intelligent and they can start to discern what their next steps or thoughts or, you know, are in doing that. And you don't have to do that by yourself. So when you meet with me, there's no expectations of what this is going to look like. It's not about me. It's about you.
Right.
And it's about what you would like to do with your life.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's not to say that you aren't going to suggest give people options for directions to go, you know, not unlike AA, we have these, they call them the 12 steps, but if you read in the book, it says, here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery.
So I know of a lot of resources in this community and area and in our state and in the neighboring state. And if I am curious to thinking that there might be more that someone could use, I go grab somebody like Sean or another coworker, and I bring them in and I say, hey, this is what my peer is thinking they want to work on doing, and what do you know? And try to present all of the resources and options, because again, like I said, it's really about connecting people to the recovery community and helping them find what they need. And a lot of times things can seem kind of overwhelming. So being able to have more than just yourself in this process to take steps with, I think is very helpful.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think it's beyond helpful. I think it's actually quite necessary.
You know? I really do.
I don't want to keep harping on AA, but if I hadn't found someone to what we call sponsor me, I doubt I could have progressed very far through the book, because it seemed to have been written in some crazy arcane language that I couldn't understand. And, you know, you don't always get the point. So yeah, having somebody there to, like, the expression you like to use is, you know, walk through it with you.
Yeah.
Is quite helpful, because it can be a very confusing and daunting path to go down.
Right. And I mean, anytime anyone's trying to learn something new, that's going to take a little bit as well. Like if you go to school, you've got a teacher teaching you and you know, people in your class with you, you're studying together, you're doing all these things. No one's really learning anything new. Well, I mean, you can learn things new, but there's still someone providing information. So,
right, exactly.
And also I want to kind of share that, like, I mean, we here at the Recovery Center look at things like we're on this equal level with you. We're both peers and we're working on a common goal of like recovery related things. Like I said, it looks different, but it's just kind of combining knowledge, you know, to try to figure out what next steps there are.
Right. Yeah, right.
We can talk about goals and housing and all sorts of things.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me, if your experience is similar to mine, that quite often when I'm working through my program with a newcomer, that I learn things.
Yeah, absolutely. All the time.
You know, it's like, they'll bring up something that they've done that seems to be working for them. And they'll be asking me, like, is that okay? And I'm like, wow, it's beyond okay. I'm going to start doing that.
And I just thought of something while we were talking, and that is that, you know, during this process of meeting with someone here, they're really, it's not like it's just limited to recovery things. There are other things in the community that I help people get connected to. Elizabeth is really great about helping people get job applications and writing resumes. And so people work on getting jobs, work on getting housing. It's about doing life, applying for different kinds of benefits. There's just a lot of like normal life things that we're doing together. We have a couple of computers out in the front room that people can hop onto and do what they need to. I've connected people with various things, things that have to do with helping them through domestic violence or legal things.
Well, when you talk about housing, we have we're the landlords of a couple of Oxford House, one running right now for the men, and
about to run for women.
Right, exactly.
So hopefully December, they'll get the two switched around as far as like the people living where they're living, and then there will be a woman's house opened up, and I believe that is, you know, well, I know that is for women and, you know, children, if they have children with them.
Right.
And it's a very nice home that they will be.
Oh yeah, it's brand new.
It's available. Yeah, it's beautiful. I've been in there a couple of times. It's got some, it's just, everything's new.
Right.
And there's lots of bathrooms and bedrooms and space and everything like that. It's got a yard. It's actually in a really great location for kids as far as the pool and the HERC and different kinds of things there as well.
Yeah, Bendel School, the Lena Whitmore is not very far away.
The charter school's right there. Right. There's a bus stop. There's,
there's all of that. Oh, and just so people know, the LRC is basically a landlord. The Oxford group, which you can read about online, actually manages the houses.
Right.
And we originally bought a house a couple of years ago, not long after people moved in. It burned, and it was rebuilt. And that just, and it had been a men's house. So when it reopened just last June, July, I think, and we got men in there, we purchased a second house, and it's been going through a pretty major rehab, roof and heating and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. But that house will now become the men's house.
Right.
And we will be able to open a women's house in the newly rebuilt house.
Yes.
In this area, the need seems to be greater for men than women. So the men's house, the new men's house will, I think, accommodate up to 10.
I got a tour.
Where the women's, I think it's only 8.
So right I got now. A tour with Daryl last month, and wow. I was like, how many kids did these people have? Like, it's mm-hmm. it's gigantic. I feel like there's literally like 10 bedrooms in there. It's
it was a child care at one time.
Well, it's huge, and the backyard is huge, and it's just wow. And there's a school by there.
Yeah, literally
bus stop is right around the corner. Yeah, it's a really nice house. Yeah,
yeah, that's for a small town like Moscow is our. Public transit is actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
A lot of little short buses running around.
Yeah, a lot of little short buses running around, absolutely. And so, like, applications for that, I believe those are available here to get. And again, Elizabeth or one of us here can help you, you know, get that sent over or call somebody. Right. There is also the Joshua House that's close by here that we can print you off an application for that. That's a Christian-based place, as you know, like, you know, for men.
Well,
and you know, and there's Sojourners, and so we have a few, you know.
Yeah.
All of these, you know, you need to be following the guidelines and things like that. Right. There are different guidelines for each of the three of those. But you can totally, we can help you if you need to, you know, read through what all those different ones are.
Right, right, exactly. And again, Oxford House does have an excellent web.
They do, and explains everything pretty well.
Yeah, on their homepage, they actually have a video that just spells it all out, black and white, very easy.
Because they have a certain way that they run it, and like if you live there, you're participating in it running, and so there's just certain duties that you have, but it's different than say the Joshua House in some of the rules, and so like there's differences, and so being able to discern by learning about each of them will help guide you to which one would be most appropriate for you.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and that's kind of in general while we all try to keep up on our resources and how things work is so that we can hopefully understand a little bit about it and share information so people can decide.
And you know, I know jobs here. I know you guys keep a up to date. List of what they call felony-friendly employers.
Yeah, we do.
Because that's a huge thing. When people get out of jail, the hardest thing to do is to find work.
Right.
And if you don't have work, you can't have a roof over your head, and there's an excellent chance that you're going to reoffend.
Right.
So we want to avoid that, you know. It's one thing to get sober in jail. It's another thing to stay sober on the outside. You know, not everyone has the opportunity you did to pick up a copy of the AA Big Book or the NA Book.
The NA Book and the Recovery Bible and go,
wait a minute.
Wait a second. How did I not realize for like 10 years that I was an addict? This book is all about me. I think maybe I need to do something different.
Maybe
brain explosions.
Right.
I feel like there's this like a thickness of denial that must have just been really covered over my brain, and it took a little bit of time and a time out to think a little clearly.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We were going to talk a little bit about Rural Crisis too. For those of you who don't know, the Rural Crisis Center Network is a network of, I believe, 5 centers
probably in our area, and I don't know the number. You probably know better than I do the number.
Yeah, because I know there's one here, of course, one in Lewiston, one in Grangeville, one in Orfino, and I think there's another one, but I can't remember it. But anyway, what the Rural Crisis Center Network does, well, is it's run by the state health department. It's funded by them.
It's funded by Magellan right now.
Right. And the Latah Recovery Center, our staff here, mans the recovery center here, including we have people on call for off hours.
Right. So if it's like before 10 a.m. or after 8 p.m., you know, we're going to, there's going to be a number one come in along with a counselor to meet you. And then if the counselor leaves and the crisis is still continuing, then a number two will come in and be so that there's two people here at all times. And yeah. What else were you going to share on that?
Well, and just the mechanics of it briefly, if someone goes into crisis Monday through Friday, and it, you know, could be suicide, could be a domestic issue, any sort of behavioral or mental health mental crisis health, that someone might find themselves in, from, like you said, 10 to 8, Monday through Friday, they can come into the recovery center, say, hey,
you can literally just walk in.
And that will start the ball rolling.
Yes.
If it's after hours, there's a toll-free number people can call. They'll talk with someone on the phone, quite possibly get their situation resolved there, which is great. If not, the recovery center, or not recovery center, the crisis center nearest to where they are will be alerted, and they'll be directed to that center. And so our number one will come in and meet the person and start doing the little bit of paperwork that's involved. And then we'll wait for one of the professional counselors, I believe Scott's Community Care is the one for us in Moscow. They'll come over and they'll do the assessment. And one of a few things can happen. One, if they're really in a really, really bad place and they need medical attention, they can be walked down to Gritman or
if they want to,
wherever they want to go.
Yeah.
Secondly, if it's going to take a while to resolve, they can stay here for up to 23 hours and 59 minutes. And if they need to stay longer, we can walk them out the door, walk back in, start the process over again, which is pretty rare. Or they can just, you know, talk to the counselor, get kind of things figured out, get settled down, and then, you know, go about their business after that.
Right.
I do know that the special connection between the Crisis Center Network and the LRC, being as they're literally attached, is that when someone does come out of a crisis, if they want to do something to help themselves, if there is something they can do to help themselves, we can walk them right into the recovery center.
So a lot of times I come over to the crisis center to talk with someone. If I'm not already over here because I am a crisis on-call person, and so if I'm here during the day, I might be the one coming over here. And also, if there is one going on and they're like, oh, this person needs a recovery coach, then I come and meet them and we talk and see if they want to, so we talk then and then see if they want to make an appointment for the next time they can come in, just to kind of get them connected while we're there. And that's a lot of what's happening is, you know, people are sharing what's going on. They are with a counselor, they're with a number one is typically, is, not typically, is someone who is schooled, like for instance, Sean, who has an education in mental health stuff. He's also a peer specialist. So he is there interacting with them. And in a sense, it's kind of as equal as the counselor from what I've experienced. So, I mean, they are doing their thing, those two, with the person that they're meeting with, or multiple people sometimes. And just figuring out, like, with them, it's completely voluntary, with them, what it looks like as we're walking forward. Sometimes people just need to have some time and space to be able to just be without the stress, to have people to talk with, sometimes just to rest. I've gone and gotten meals before. I mean, we feed people, we have snacks here, but sometimes we go get food. Because that can actually be really helpful after someone comes through something, is to be able to eat. And
well, we have a full bathroom back there.
Yeah, I mean, there's shower. And,
we have
yeah.
clothes if...
Well, we have a washing machine. I don't know about clothes, but I've seen people get clothes. Mm-hmm. I've seen people go do something like that.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot of different things that can meet the needs of the person. And the idea would be to get them stable and either to their next step or, you know, home or whatever that kind of looks like. Yeah.
Right, right. So that's a big feather in the LRC's cap as far as I'm concerned. It's also a model because we don't staff it 24 hours a day.
We call people in.
It's an on-call thing. There have been other areas that have looked at this. Now, in the big city, it's less practical because there's more people. So they have to have, you know, a fully staffed center, you know, works 24 hours. They
Have
security.
Kind of like we work here, you know, next door and everything like that. They have people that work and are staffed. And so, yeah, and we just don't have the demand to have like a whole staff specifically all day long. And so, like I sometimes get a call in the middle of the night and come in.
Yeah. And that's... saves a lot of money, saves a lot of time. I know local law enforcement love the program because they aren't stuck either having to drag somebody in a mental health crisis into the legal system because they know that's not going to make things better.
Well, sometimes, and sometimes they would take people to the hospital and stuff like that. And sometimes this is really a good in-between to be able to figure things out in a non-emergency room way.
Right.
And yes, sometimes people do choose to go over to the hospital and get further services in the direction that they're wanting to move, and that's good. But this is free for people that come here.
Right.
So it's at no cost. We're not billing your insurance or anything like that. I mean, yes, the crisis center is, you know, getting repaid by Magellan, whatever. But, like, the person participating and coming in is not being charged money.
Right.
So it's a really cool way to be able to get your need met and not saying no to getting your need met because you're not wanting to incur the cost of an ER visit or a copay of an ER visit. Because yes, you know, like a lot of us have insurance, but we still have some copays to pay. And there is definitely some insurance that there are no copays, but it gives you that advantage of not putting financial stuff in the way of getting your need met and being able to take care of yourself.
Right,
exactly. That's what we want.
And maybe that's something I should have mentioned at the very beginning. It's free.
It's free.
It's free. Yeah. So don't let finances keep you from, you know, getting what you need as far as treatment. Same thing with the recovery center.
Right. Yes, everything's free. I am free.
Recovery coaching is free. Yeah. We get money from the state. We do our own fundraising. Mm-hmm. We have
an
incredibly generous community where people will throw $100,000 at us.
Yep.
You know, it's because it works and they know it works.
Right.
And everything we do here is, you know, evidence-based stuff. So it's been tested, evaluated by whoever those powers are.
Right.
And it works.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic.
It really is.
Well, hey, now that we've gotten through all that, something I wanted to talk about today with you, because we're into November, and traditionally November for AA and NA groups, it's called Gratitude Month.
Man, it's already November.
I know.
I feel like this month has like flown through. And I honestly, when you brought up the subject to do work on gratitude, I'm so grateful that you did. Because I don't know, I can't remember anyone specifically talking about this month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was mentioning the
Johnny.
Same thing. I go to a lot of
well,
a lot of AA meetings, and usually It's like every meeting in November, we're going to talk about gratitude again. Oh, God.
But no one's brought it up.
But it just, for some reason, has not perked up. So so gratitude, what is gratitude to me? Well, gratitude for me allows me to, even in my darkest moments, think of all the, blessings, I'll say, that I have, advantages, blessings. I've got a warm place to sleep at night. I've got a warm place to poop.
You don't have other people watching you, in jail or prison. Right. I'm just saying.
Right.
That'll keep you on the straight and narrow.
Yeah. A friend of mine talks about that after he got out of prison and was working with a sponsor, and he's like, I don't know how all great this sobriety thing is. He goes, well, did you have to shower this morning in front of 50 other guys? Well, no. Did you have to poop in front of 50 other guys? Mm-hmm. Well, no.
And that is so something to be grateful for if you've had that experience.
Right. And even just the smallest things. And we do a thing called making a gratitude list. Mm-hmm. And it never ceases to amaze me how I can make a gratitude list today, and tomorrow I can make another one, and it'll be 10 more things added to it, maybe that I just didn't think of, It's like gratitude right now, right today. Refrigerator went out at home. Had to buy a new refrigerator. Oh my God, we had cash in the bank.
Right.
To buy a refrigerator.
Yeah. That's awesome.
In the past, it's like, oh, a credit card. Oh, great. 22% interest, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we had the means for it, but still, just like, we have cash.
Yeah, that's so cool.
That's like crazy. And other just little things. I got shoes that I can just slip into. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts about gratitude?
Gratitude is pretty awesome. And I think that it's something that was really developed over this last 11 years for me in recovery. I remember early on, trying to go to sleep, and I'd heard about this gratitude thing. And it's not to say that I hadn't practiced gratitude prior to my life, but this was intentional, And so back in the beginning, I used to just literally think about what had changed from right before I went to recovery, not having a home. And so I would go to sleep and I would think, I'm so grateful for this pillow. I'm so grateful for this blanket. I'm so grateful for this bed. I'm so grateful for the roof over my head. I'm so grateful that my kids are with me. You know what I mean? And I would keep going until I just couldn't remember anymore because I fell asleep. So that's one of my most memorable experiences with gratitude in recovery, which it just stays with me. And now it's that, and it's also another thing that comes to mind that I think is really cool is sometimes things are really hard and I'm just like, oh man, this is really hard right now. And I think to okay, over this last 11 years ago, or this last 11 years, when something really hard has happened, oh yeah, so in this circumstance that really sucked, this happened. I'm so grateful that that happened. Those things that I can point back to show me how God showed up for me. Things worked out. I relied on my community. I have supports and all these different kinds of things. And you know what? Today, if something were to blow up, I still have that. And that's what I remember when I'm in the hospital. ER right. with something crazy happening is I'm not in this alone. And so I am so, so grateful that today recovery has brought me healthy, safe people that support me and care about me. Mm-hmm. And I do that for other people as well, because they first modeled it for me. And then I'm just like, oh, wow, okay. So I know how to be a friend. I know how to be supportive. I know how to bring a meal over. I know how to pray for somebody. I know how to show up and all those kinds of things.
Right.
And that is just so awesome. And so remembering those things a little bit day to day. Sometimes when I meet with people, they're sharing about something that's really, really hard. And I will say, well, I hear how this is really hard and man, and give that space and stuff for it. But I'll also try to see if there is something that was positive or something, mm-hmm. you know, something. Well, tell me about a similar time that you were in this situation and things worked out, or try to point back to something. Mm-hmm. And again, I don't do that all the time because I don't want to make it seem like their current struggle isn't important, because it is.
Right.
You know what I mean? But sometimes it seems like it fits to say that.
Right. Well, and you know, somebody who has, you know, had a recovery experience, we've been able to look at our history, both good and bad.
Yeah.
And say, well, of course that happened. Look mm-hmm. at the behavior I was repeating.
For sure.
But at the same time, you can be grateful that I remembered that, oh yeah, this is a bad idea. Maybe yeah. before I make that. Yeah. You know, an amazing thing I've heard told so many times in meetings that it's like weird. People who have, through their addictions, wound up in handcuffs at the hands of an officer, and how they've sought them out in recovery to actually thank them.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Because you not letting that slide that day, that night, mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. and forcing me, you know, to realize, you know, where I was in my life, it was a turning point.
Right.
Maybe not the turning point, but definitely a turning point, mm-hmm. So that I could, you know, launch into this much healthier, you know, lifestyle now.
Right. Absolutely.
And I have a friend who's a police officer. He used to be an officer here in town. Now he's over in Seattle. And he says it's not unusual for that to happen to him. Mm-hmm. He says it happens maybe three times a year. Mm-hmm. He'll run into somebody who he arrested at some point, maybe years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, they may have been what he calls a frequent flyer. Mm-hmm. You know, he may have been arrested this person multiple times, you know, for, you know, anything from big deals to just, you know,
their own stuff,
petty theft. Yep. And he'll run into them, and they're like, he goes, most of the time I don't really recognize them, you know, although I should with mm-hmm. all the time, mm-hmm. because they just look so different.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's something true. To be grateful for. Yeah. We were complimenting each other earlier,
right.
You know, on how we look. And, you know, you take a look at some people who have, you know, gone down the addiction road and stayed with it for a long time. Yeah. You know, the ugliness of their life, you know, can reflect in their face.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
and
sad.
You can see when people make the change, you can start to see that, like, change.
Yeah.
And as you can see health coming to them,
mm-hmm.
it's amazing the transformation that can happen. But I think that is really cool about what you said about the police officer. And I think that as, you know, as they see people that they, you know, in those situations, as they're doing better, that's really cool. I'm sure it's very inspiring. Probably gives them a lot of the reason why they get up to do their job. But I'll stick to I am me statements and say it's a lot of the reason why I get up to do my job. Mostly and foremostly for the fact that there were so many people that showed up in my recovery through the Latah County Drug Court Program and all the staff and counselors and things and participants and the police and the judges and stuff like that. And then my church community, my friends, and everyone, you know, just like everything that people did that was just so kind, and all the hundreds and possibly thousands of people that have contributed to the last 11 years. To be a small part of like what that looks like for someone else is awesome. I'm like, yeah, we can do hard things. That's fine.
Right.
Cause you know, sometimes things don't go the way I would hope for somebody, but that's okay. Right. Seeds have been planted and it's not my life, but I hope to be something that can be a part of
right.
what people are doing.
Right.
And well, it's not for me to determine. I just show up and people get to decide what they're going to do.
Right.
No pressure from
me. And,
you know, I respect you.
Yeah, it's like we say in AA, we have to give it away to keep it.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
You know, our sobriety was given to us by the grace of God, and our ability to hold on to it is, you know, directly related for me to, you know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the last of the 12 steps says that we tried to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers.
Right.
And that's what I have to do on a daily basis.
Right.
I have to answer my phone at 3 in the morning with some guy whining about some insignificant thing that's just, you know, going to make him drink again. No. Not necessarily unlike that.
Because you never did that to anyone else, right?
Right? I never did. Not in early sobriety.
Right? Yeah, and no, that's what we remember when that happens. It's like, oh, yeah, right. Yeah, I did this too.
That's right. And, you know,
yeah.
I'm grateful for that opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and most of all, I think you might agree with me, I'm grateful to my Creator for grabbing me by the nape of the neck and putting my butt in a chair in an AA meeting.
There you go.
Because it was not really my idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got to that point in my drinking where I knew I couldn't live like that anymore, and I asked into the darkness of night for help. And when I woke up the next morning, I didn't have that compulsion to drink, even though I knew I was going to get really sick. And the next thought was, once I got past the withdrawals, was, I think I better go check out AA.
Yeah.
And that is not a thought I would necessarily have on my own.
Right.
Because Lord knows I hadn't for 30 years prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm grateful to God for that.
Right.
First and foremost.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, that changed your life.
Yep.
I just want to give that a second to like soak in
before
I go to my next thought. But yeah, it is amazing how you had that space that next morning to be able to accomplish moving forward, having the will to be able to go through what you knew was going to be absolute, you know?
Yeah.
I wanted to say that I always tell myself I need to brush up on the bigger words to what I'm going to share. And that is that neuroscience-wise, because it uses different parts of your brain, this is what I've been told or have heard, is that, okay, so for instance, if my brain is just going out of control in a way that I don't like, it's being really negative, if I'm being unkind about myself or others, and it's just not serving me well, then I go to, okay, you need to stop. And so then we're going to focus on something positive. It's a different part of your brain. Mm-hmm. So that noise stops for a little bit, at least while you're doing the gratitude. And I'm going to practice some gratitude about anything. And that usually helps lower that noise over here for long enough that I can have a little bit better of perspective.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I've practiced this myself and several times. And I challenge anyone out there who is struggling with thoughts or emotions or whatever to just sit for a moment, take a couple of breaths, and think about all the things that you're grateful for. Specifically, just name them off.
Like you said.
And it will.
That I have a pillow to rest my head on.
Yeah.
That I have a bed to lay in.
Right. Yeah. And at least for that amount of time. Yes, it may start after you stop. But my guess is that it's going to be a little less loud in your head after you do the gratitude. And that tool to be able to have a little bit of space so that you don't do something that you don't want to is really important.
Oh, yeah.
As I've worked here, I've added on to the different things that people have shared with me, and I've learned more about the things that are healthy for our mental health and to get through hard things. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of things that can be done.
Absolutely.
And so that is a start.
And speaking of things that are to be done, the show are to be done right
about now.
It's to
be done. Yeah. Thank you all for listening today.
Yeah. And thank you, Denise, for making some time. We're going to get together on a more regular basis.
Yep.
I think is the deal we're making now that you, now that I actually can bribe your boss into forcing you to have time.
Right. No, this is cool. And originally what had taken me away about 3 years ago was my mom's declining health with age. And she is safely now being taken care of in a retirement home. And I go visit her. And so I'm not, along with my adult daughter that was helping out with that, I'm not taking care of a grown adult.
Right.
Which was just a lot back then. So.
Oh, yeah. Having been there, done that. And
It's quite
t-shirt.
The experience.
Yeah, it's
I
a
love
lot
her
of
so
work.
Much. Yeah.
So I will close it down now with my usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with substances or behavioral health, you do.